Hey guys, I'm Jason Guymon, host of the King of Pressure Wash podcast. I'm a self-employed entrepreneur. I grew my pressure washing business to a $1 million business in under 5 years. And now I'm here helping hundreds of pressure washers start, grow, be successful in their pressure washing business so that they can be the king of pressure washing in their area too. Today's show is going to be an awesome show on the King of Pressure Wash podcast.
Oh, well, I'm a father. I got three kids and been married going on 12 years now, and blended family. So I have
Brady Bunch.
What's that?
The Brady Bunch.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so I got three kids. One works for State Farm in the IT department. He's very sharp, very good at IT stuff and security. So that's pretty cool. And then I got a young college, UTA. She's going to international marketing. And I got a middle daughter that's her second year in University of Arkansas, and she's in the nursing program.
Awesome. So, awesome.
What's up? Yeah.
So how did you get started in pressure washing?
Well, I was kind of raised into it.
Was it raised or reared?
Yeah. I had, tell me if the sound gets bad because I'm going to try to relax a little bit.
No, you're good. It was my stupidity on my side. It was on my, I thought it was in my earbuds and it wasn't. So.
Okay. So my dad, I believe I was in first grade when we moved to Texas. And he started a partnership with some other guys down here as contract cleaners, and power washing was really in its infancy at that time. And I started going out on the truck with him when I was in elementary, just like it was cool to go ride with dad.
Right.
He would go do fleet washing or whatever it was on the weekends for his contract work. And then when I was a senior in high school, I started working summers and weekends for him, learning the family business. And at that time, he had transitioned out of being a contract cleaner into a manufacturer distributor in the power washing industry.
So he wasn't cleaning that much at that point?
Not when I was working for him. Not when I basically was working summers and weekends. I learned how to work on power washers and how to repair them and knew them backwards and forward pretty much. As far as how to fix equipment and how it ran and all that, I completely understood the mechanics behind power washing.
There's not too many people out there know how to do that now.
Yeah. Well, the equipment's changed a little bit. So, the 12 volt systems, I still haven't quite learned. I know all the 110 volt, burners.
Right.
But, we run them. I have staff that does that, but that's, I've grown a business. I don't have time to work on equipment like I used to, though I enjoy it. It's fun. I kind of enjoy fixing stuff.
So that's a little bit about being in the business versus being working on your business.
That's true. Very much so. Yeah.
And what was the transition that made you wanted to start doing that?
To be frank, when I started as a contract cleaner, it was never my intent to be in the industry as long as I am. I went to college. I got an accounting degree, and my intent was to graduate and then to go work for somebody. Once I graduated and went through a couple of interviews, I realized I really didn't want to work for anybody. I really wanted to keep running my business. And at that time, the environmental regulations were starting to hit the industry they were coming about. And it really didn't hit in my market till 1993. And I graduated college in 91. In 93, they hit, and I saw an opportunity. If I could solve the problem of wash water recovery, then I had a market that I could sell to. And that's actually what sparked the birth of PWNA, on a side note. But I used that as an opportunity to grow my customer base and to offer power washing with those services. And because of what we were doing with PWNA at the time, I shared everything I learned, told people what I was learning, how I was recovering water. And dad actually started manufacturing equipment to be able to do it. Mm. And other people, you know, use those ideas and incorporate it into their equipment too. So it was kind of a thing to help keep the industry alive, because there were several people that just said, forget it, I'm going to get out of business. And that's what they did. So that's how that so kind of transitioning. I didn't ask your question. I got sidelined, which I can easily do, because there's a lot for me to talk about when it comes to power washing. The transition for me was probably in 93 when I decided that I was going to stay in the business and I was going to go full time with it. Now, I had seen several contractors through working for my dad that grew their contract cleaning business, but they were still behind the gun all the time.
Right.
I don't like say that's bad for anybody. If that's your choice and that's what you want to do, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just not where I saw myself when I got to that retirement age. And the guys that I can think of, they were successful. I mean, they did quite well. They lived in nice houses. They took well their kids. Their kids went to college and stuff like that. I just didn't foresee myself in my 50s and 60s being behind the gun. That's not really where I wanted to be. So I began to think, how do I grow the business? And I started learning management skills, those kind of things, and how to grow. And just started going down that path. And I think for the most part, even though I had a college education in accounting, it helped me a lot with my business, but it didn't help me a lot when it came to the people side and the management side. And if you're going to grow a business, that's where the skill set comes in to grow a business, is being someone who's good at managing people, understanding people, and can be a leader that people want to follow.
Now, micromanaging, that really helps that out, don't it?
Micromanaging? Yeah, a lot of sarcasm there.
Sorry.
Well, and that's what a lot of us have trouble with. I mean, if you want to grow, it's hard to let go, and it's hard to stop being a micromanager. It's hard to let go of that stuff and start trusting people and then giving people the tools and the guidance and to help them grow.
Right.
If you're going to grow, you have to help other people grow to help you grow. It's.
I always say the hardest two things in starting a business is obviously going full time and getting off the truck.
Yeah.
You know, and letting people do what they need to do and letting people finding the right people that can be successful for you and give, like you say, give a little guidance, and then you're able to let it go and let them do what they're good at. And when that happens, then you become like Michael and explode and move on. But you still have failures. You still have things that go wrong. But
I still have failures today. That never stops. That's part of the growth process.
And that's the beauty of it, you know. And so what is, I know I talked about it a little bit, but mindset. I believe a lot has to do with mindset and how we can grow our business and things that we need to do. And so with that said, what are some things of mindset that you think that will help a person either start or grow or get to that next level?
Boy, you know, it's funny you say this. I actually do a presentation that has a lot to do with this, but
I think I've seen that presentation. That's why I'm asking that question, because I think I gave it up to Bethlehem. So
it might have been along those lines. I'm not sure, because I've done so many. But I will say your number one asset is your mind. And a lot of people say your number one asset is time. And I won't discount that time is a huge asset, and that it is a very valuable asset because it's finite. But your number one asset is your mind, and developing your mind and being able to strengthen your mind and to grow your mind is going to be what determines how you become successful in life. So I want to say that before I say what's going to make you successful. So your mind is your key to being successful, and it can either help you be successful or it can be against you. You play the biggest role in your success by either listening to people who doubt you or listening to people who encourage you or being that voice in the back of your head that makes you get up every morning, has the determination and the discipline to do what it takes to be a successful business owner. And that goes for every aspect of your life. If you don't have good control of your mind, you will never be successful. And some people will have a very hard time understanding that concept because they don't look internally to improve. They look externally and they blame the world for their problems. They blame the world for where they're at. That doesn't mean that bad things don't happen to good people. That means that everybody has a different path in life to walk down. And when you compare yourself to someone else's path, you're already defeating yourself. You need to look within your own path and find the things that you can do to make yourself better and take advantage of the things that have happened to you or that you're blessed with so that you can be a successful person and successful in business and life in general. So that might have been really deep.
I love it because, you know, that's one thing I always try to say. You got to be, you know, you're like the five people you're around. And so if you're around successful people, you'll be successful. And, you know, you don't always want to be at the top of the five people you're around. You'd rather be at the bottom of the five people so you can move up versus being at the top and then you have nowhere to go.
Right. And that's a difficult thing. It's hard for me at times, and I try to find myself in challenging situations. But the more successful you get, the easier it is to insulate yourself and kind of like be the smartest person in the room all the time, or to be the guy that doesn't have to work so hard. And so if you can find and put yourself in those challenging situations and have somebody around you that challenges you, that will enable you to keep growing and become better at your skill set or new skill sets even.
So one of the guys on here, I talk to him a lot, and he worries about his competition. So he put, so I should stop worrying about my competition.
Yeah. Well, to a degree. I mean, I kind of pay attention to what my competition is doing. But you know what you should really pay attention to, more important than what your competition is? Your customers. What do your customers want from you? What makes your customers happy? And focus your energy on the responses and the input you're getting from your customers, because that's who you need to make happy.
That's a good point, because I always tell them, go look at what their competition is doing bad. But if your customers are writing good reviews about you and you're doing good things, that's what we need to keep focusing on and keep pushing on that.
So what happens, and sometimes I'm a victim of this too, and I have to pull myself back. If you start looking at all your competition and what all of them are doing, because we don't have just one competitor. Usually we have one or two that are good. And then we got three or four, maybe five or six others out there that are those little voices that we see and the things that we're doing. And then you start trying to duplicate all those different things out there, and you're never good at one or good to your customer that you service well. So make sure you find that customer that you service well. And one of the things that was explained to me a long time ago that I find to be a helpful is to think about who is your best customer and what is it that you like about them and why are they your best customer, and keep doing those things to attract other customers that are like your best customer.
Yes. Find their friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
100%.
On a side note, I'm going to apologize if I sound a little stuffed up and congested. I actually got diagnosed with COVID on Monday.
Did you really?
So, yeah. So I'm working through it, and I'm at home in quarantine right now.
Nice.
That's why I sound a little hoarse, but actually it's not that bad. I'm fortunate not to to be as sick as some are from it.
Have you had a fever or anything?
I've never had a fever. I haven't had a fever at all. I've had a little bit of some mild body aches. And trying to think, and it feels like I've had, sinuses or allergies.
Yeah.
So my head gets a little stuffy at times and then it goes away and then it comes back. But
yeah,
other than that, it hasn't been anything that's concerning for me.
So with, I know I've been in business for like a third of the time you've been in business because you're getting old. You're older than a lot of people on here. You know, I got one guy in here, he's 15 years old, wanting to know how to get more clients and start, you know, that kind of stuff.
Love hearing that, you know, because I started my business in 1985.
You know, I love hearing it too, because I actually met Wesley. Wesley is a dude out of Atlanta that started when he's 19. He's 25 years old. He's going to hit $1 million this year, just house washing in a small area, you know, and that's what I love to hear, success stories of that. But yeah. But talking about that, so I know I've been in, and I've seen a lot of people come into the business. I've seen a lot of people, you know, fail or whatever you want to say. So with how long you've been in business, what are some things that you see that are different that make people successful and profitable and stay in business versus the one that goes out of business?
Well, understanding when you're profitable. I think that's one of the biggest things that I see causing new people coming into business to fail. They don't understand their costs, and they don't understand how to charge right. And they think the best way to get business is to get business based on price. Everyone's going to do that to some degree when they first start. But if you don't understand your costs going forward to adjust your pricing so that you can be profitable, then you're going to continue to make that mistake over and over, and you're not going to be able to adjust your numbers for the next job. So like, and I did it. I underbid some jobs when I first started, and I chalk those up to experience, because even though I underpriced it, I was learning. And sometimes some of the jobs I took on, I didn't really know how to do back then. There wasn't the sharing of information like there is today. So I had to really just go out and learn on the job and use my best judgment on what it took to do the jobs. And sometimes I hit a home run, and sometimes I didn't. So what I see people failing at is they work a 9-to-5 job. Let's say they're making $15 an hour. So then they go get a power washing job and they say, well, I'm going to charge them $25 an hour and I'm doing great. Well, here's the problem with that. Okay, let's say let's change the scenario. Let's make it even better than that. Let's say they're making $25 an hour. They're making a decent wage already. They're making $25 an hour. They have a house, or maybe they're renting. They have a garage. Works out great for them. Now they go get a side job. And let's actually say they're going to charge $30 an hour. So they think they're making more than they are on their full-time job. What they're failing to factor into that is that house that they're storing their equipment in costs them money. That vehicle that they have to drive to the job site costs them money. That gas that they're putting in the equipment, that costs money. So basically what they're doing is their full-time job is subsidizing their ability to be a power washer. And if you're subsidizing your side gig, you will never be able to go full-time. And when you try to go full-time with it, you're going to fail because you're not covering your costs to be successful. And I see that happen time and time again. And it's going to continue to happen because not enough people are going to listen to what I'm saying, or they're going to think they're smarter than me and that they're mad because I just told them they did it wrong.
And this is coming from an accountant, which is a math guy that loves math. And guess what? At the end of the day, it's all math. It's all math, you know? It's all about cost. It's all about how much time. It's all math at the end of the day, you know? That's what's going to make or break us at the end of the day, is figuring out what the cost is. And I agree 100% because, you know, I always love the people that want to be cheap and think that they're go off of quantity or, you know, quantity versus quality. Yeah. And it's like, you're not going to be successful at the end of the day. So, so you do a lot of things, and you own I don't know if you own one of the biggest fleet washing companies around. I know you are all over across the country, aren't you? Is that correct?
Well, I'm not on my fleet washing. Well, okay. So what do I own? What do I have? I have Steam Away, that's what I started in 1985. That's my fleet washing business that we do locally in the DFW area. And we're a good size. I don't, unless it's a national brand, I believe we are the largest in the DFW Metroplex. for a local service that does fleet washing. You know, there are some national brands out there that are bigger than us. And then the kitchen exhaust cleaning I do, which we cover the state of Texas, Oklahoma, we go into Louisiana, New Mexico, a little bit into Kansas, Colorado, and New Mexico, Colorado, Kansas, we're using some subs for that, but we self-perform 95% of our work, which is in Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas. So we have some bigger clients that we just need a little help with in those outside areas that we cover. And then we have powerwash.com, which we have, if it's okay for me to plug, we have a YouTube channel.
I put the link down into the description because I'm going to try to help Michael get some subscribers today. That. So
that's actually, I think the link you put in is for Powerwash University.
Oh, I think it is. It's my competitor, so that's all right.
Yeah. We don't post that much on the Powerwash University side.
I'll change out that link then.
But we do that. And then, of course, like you said, Powerwash University is, we kind of compete, but it's always good to be a friendly competitor and have people that are respectable in it because not everybody's like that, unfortunately.
Hey, I learned from a lot of people. I buy from my own competitors and I learn stuff off of, you know, I don't discriminate because I'll tell you right now, I don't know everything. Michael don't know everything. You know, I guarantee I don't know everything. You know, I got my niche. It is what it is, you know, and that's why.
Well, I think you do good. You do real good. You've actually, you've grown your channel tremendously. You've done a good job at it. And I commend you for it. Kudos.
You know, and that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I love doing what I do. You know, I love coming on here, doing these lives and helping people start, grow, be successful. And, you know, if they want to go do kitchen cleaning, you can have at it. You know, I've done one or two classes of that and I'm like, that's the stupidest thing ever to get all nasty, greasy, dirty, you know? And
yeah.
You know, I'll stick to my house washing and roof cleaning, concrete cleaning, you know.
I have a lot of people tell me that. I'll tell you what, the first three kitchen exhaust cleaning jobs I did were Chinese restaurants, and I swore I would never do them again. And then look at me now, I got.
You still don't do them again.
Well, no, I don't. You also teach people how to do it, too. So,
right.
You know, it's they all attract a different type of individual. And So like when we hire people that want to work nights,
right.
And we find people that do that and they do good and they flourish at it. And there are people that have a good background and they know the kitchen industry. And so they go into it and they're successful with it because they have a good skill set and set of people that they know that launch them into that industry really good. So it helps. It depends on earlier, it depends on what things you're blessed with in your life that you can take advantage of and to be successful. So, and that's the thing about power washing is there's so many different things that you can clean out there that can create an opportunity. And there's some really finite niches of people out there that are super successful that most of us haven't even heard about because that's your niche.
Talking about that, I'm going to go down this road of, I was talking to a guy that has been at ServiceMaster for, his name's Ed. He's up in New Jersey area and he's been at ServiceMaster for 31 years. And I was talking to him today and nobody else in ServiceMaster. And so he'd been there 31 years in ServiceMaster doing that. And he was like, you know why the Jewish people are very successful a lot of times? They will find their niche and that is all they do. They don't mow their grass. They don't do nothing. They find that one thing that they're very good at and they, you know, it's based like hammering a nail. You know, you don't hammer 10 nails. If you find that one nail one time and you hammer away at it, you're going to get better at it and better at it and better at it. And I never heard that. And I don't know if there's truth in that or not. I'm going to try to find out if there is, because that goes back to finding your niche, finding your market and hammering away and being the best at it in your area. And nobody can compete with you at that point.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to that as a devil's advocate is that you get all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
So do that, do it well, but create some other lines of passive income or passive income streams and you'll be good.
Well, and I even see it even in, you know, I know some people, and you do too, in the groups and that, of, you know, they're changing their brakes on the weekends. And this is a larger company that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, are you better off spending your time on saving that $20 an hour guy that could be doing that, even $75 an hour, and you'd be working on that $10,000 an hour thing, or, you know,
like, and there comes a time when, so I get that when you're first starting off,
right?
You know, you're trying to pinch pennies, you're trying to save costs, and you have, it shifts. There becomes, my dad said this to me when I first started my business, he goes, you have more time than money. Because that'll change one day. When you don't have the time to do all the things that you're doing now, but you'll have the funds to pay other people to do it. And that really is a hard shift. You kind of talked about shifting and changing earlier. It's a hard mindset to change and to let go of. And I'll say it for a couple reasons. One is because you want to try to save the money. That's the first one. The second one is that sometimes they become distractions because it can be gratifying to go change the brakes and say, hey, I did that, when you need to really be out there making the sales and growing your business. But you're not going to hear anybody tell you no when you change or fix the brakes on your car or your truck. You're going to be satisfied with that. But you're going to get sick of hearing a bunch of people tell you no until you get that one new account that you needed. And it's that big deal that needed to happen. So those are, again, mindsets and things that you're thinking about that can challenge you, that can actually keep you and hold you back and prevent you from growing. And I'll be honest, I still do things like that today where I'm like, man, I need to get this done because it's going to help the whole overall picture of what I'm doing with this planning phase. But instead I'll do something because I need a little more reassurance on, hey, I can do these little things. It makes me feel better about myself.
I know you love to do one thing, and I want to hit on it a little bit, and why you do it. And I think that a lot of times people get into a rut, and they get into a rut that I got to work 70, 80 hours a week, and I got to do all this stuff. Michael's like, what are you talking about, Jason? But I know that a lot of times as business owners, we need time to be able to think and to be able to clear our minds and stuff. And so I know you have a hobby of boating and love the boat and stuff like that. With that said, and it kind of goes back to mindset of, you know, a lot of times we think we got to work 80, 90 hours a week and we got to work all this time. And at the end of the day, that doesn't do us any good a lot of the time because we're not able to sit back and think about things and to be able to clear our minds a lot of time. And so I know you love boating and so that is probably your hobby that you go and that you can go clear your mind and think. Is that a thing that is true or am I just making that stuff up right now?
No. For me, boating is something that, well, boating helps, and I have friends and family that go out on the boat, and it helps distract me, and it pulls my mind off of things, and it gives me an opportunity to just shift my entire mindset. But the thing that I do on the boat that I really love to do too, and that's wake surfing. So it's another challenge. It's another thing that I focus on to get out there and get good at wake surfing, and I've actually improved a lot this year because of that, because I just reshifted when I went out to wake surf. But it really helps because sometimes you can sit there. What happens is, okay, so you have a problem or you have a challenge and you're trying to work on it. And sometimes you're just staring at the problem or staring at the thought process and you keep repeating it so many times that you don't get anywhere. But if you walk away from it and clear your mind and then come back to it at a later date, well, it's like the light bulbs start going off and you start seeing things that you didn't see, you know, 2 days before or 2 hours before, depending on what it is. And so being able to get those breaks from the mental fatigue and then come back with a fresh set of eyes and thought process can really change the way you see things. So, and just on a daily basis. So like because I find myself exposed to so many things throughout the course of the day, I try to do things that kind of break my day up and make it easier and bring down that stress level so I can have a calmer thought process. So like if I'm driving to work, I avoid the freeway because I don't want to get stuck in rush hour traffic, which is going to accelerate my stress level. I leave the office for lunch. I don't work through lunch. I actually take a break from the office and then I go back and do things like that. Now, when I was younger, I wouldn't do that. I thought, no, it got to grind. And like I said earlier, sometimes that's a good thing because you are the laborer for a while. But eventually when you become the thought processor and the person who is using your mental capacity to solve problems and to grow and to plan and to foresee, your mind is your tool. And so keeping that tool sharp is important. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. 100%. And as somebody that has been in the business as long as you, do you still learn or do you still do education any, or do you just know it all and you're able to figure out everything without doing any other education?
Well, so here's something I'm going to say. So I don't watch it much anymore. You ever watch the TV show Survivor?
Oh, yeah.
One of the biggest things that I noticed on that, which I if I hadn't watched the show, I don't think I would have ever picked up on this. Those that fail are those that become overconfident in their skill sets. And if you watch the show Survivor, whenever someone thinks they've got it won and they think they win, they get blindsided almost every time because they think they've got it beat. And enough of us have been in the industry long enough can probably think of some people who are like that and have done similar things. And I've had experiences in my own business where I got a little too cocky. I thought I was a little too smart and I got completely blindsided because I wasn't humble. And so to answer your question, I don't know it all. I know a lot and there's always going to be a new situation. So, let's use this example. Think about, so many of you that are probably watching probably weren't even alive in 1985. So
I was only five.
When I started my business, if you had a Yellow Page ad, that was a great thing. There's people on here that are watching right now. Don't even know what the Yellow Pages are. So I got a decent amount of business from a Yellow Page ad.
It was about how big the ad was.
Yeah, right. It was the bigger the ad and the closer to the top of the listing, the better off you were. Mm-hmm. Now you got to have a Google listing. You got to have some stuff on social media, things like that. So there's always going to be shifts in paradigms, so to speak, that are going to change. And if you're not looking for those things, you're going to get missed. Having a website, you know, when I started, the internet didn't even exist.
No.
Who would think now that you could, you know, even 10 years ago, you wouldn't think about running a business without a website. Well, now you can just go put some ads on Facebook and you can run a business. You don't even really have to have a website. I've got competitors and guys that jump up. I go look for their website that doesn't even exist. So
you're getting a lot of competitors.
Yeah. So it happens. Yeah, absolutely.
There's one of your competitors right there. He just gave us $10. Arkansas Softwash Kids.
There he is. Yeah. They're out there.
He does have a website. So with that said, let's go. I want to talk a little bit about thepowerwash.com. What you've grown that fairly large, and everybody's probably ever, you've had the website forever, obviously. But so this was, I'm assuming this was your dad's business. Was that correct in the beginning?
Yeah. So to get more clarity. So when I started my business, I started my truck washing business from scratch and grew it to where it is today. And it continues to grow. I started kitchen exhaust cleaning basically from scratch, but then I bought into a national brand, Facilitech. I bought a region and we had several partners. Well, the partners all split up and went different ways. And a couple of us retained the Facilitech brand. There's me and one other guy. He's on the West Coast. I'm in Central U.S. now for Facilitech. And we no longer have national coverage because those guys that left went and covered their regions. So now they're on that side of it. And then PowerWash.com, that was my dad's business. But prior to that, it was Delco Cleaning Systems of Fort Worth. And because of some ownership with trademark and stuff that went back and forth, when I took over, there was I shouldn't have to air this, but I'll just say it. I'll just let people know. There was a trademark dispute going on. I took over and I said, you know what? It'd be cheaper just rebrand and go forward and forget it. And now that brand is hardly even heard of. Most people don't even hear of it that more. So
was that when the internet was out? So you went with PowerWash.com or?
Well, my dad had the foresight to see that the internet was going to be a new medium that would be good for business. So he grabbed steamaway.com for me. He grabbed powerwash.com. He grabbed pressurewash.com. He grabbed several other really good names. But at that time, so that was around 96 when he got those. I took over in 2010. And so I rebranded in 2010 and went to powerwash.com.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the history there with that and how that took place. My dad was having some health issues and stuff, and I would still be a contract cleaner. I wouldn't really be on the distribution side if it hadn't been for that. And if I could go back 10 years and change that, I probably would stay on the contract cleaning side. But again, it helped me grow and it helped me change a lot. It helped me understand. And it really improved. I had to learn how to improve my managementship skills tremendously. And probably from about 2010 to about 2014 was about 4 years of hell for me.
Trying to learn yeah, school of hard knocks.
Yeah, yeah. and I mean this in the biggest respect for anybody who's a contract cleaner. The contract cleaning side is easy compared to the distribution side. It just is. And it's unless you keep the distribution side in a very finite niche, but we cover a broad spectrum of things with PowerWash.com. And so there's a huge knowledge base that goes along with that. There's a huge inventory supply and understanding of products. And so it really like flipped me on my head because prior to that, hey, I just had this small amount of equipment that I knew how to fix and repair and I was good and it was easy to teach people. Now we're going on the other side of it, and there's just like a tremendous amount of knowledge that goes with that. And most people don't understand that when they think about power washing. Most people's association with power washing is going to the car wash, washing their car, and they think it's great, simple, and easy. Well, and they also think that a power washer is tough as nails. When they're not, they're easy to break. They tear up easy. And people that get into this industry go down to one of the box stores, and almost said that. And then they get that machine, they go home and they clean with it and it's satisfying. But us as contract cleaners know that piece of machinery they bought at the box store goes at about the 10th of the speed of what you need to do to be a professional power washing contractor.
Right. Mike, there's all that money to be made because, you know, you got to break it down and, you know, it's just so much money to be made in there.
Yeah, yes, it is. until they start running that thing and realizing how much time it takes them to do something. And then they're like, you know what? I'm going to hire that contractor to come clean my driveway next time because it took me all day. He can be out here in about 30 minutes to an hour and have it done. And it was well worth their money to spend it. I actually think a lot of people don't like the box stores, but I think based on what I've seen over the past 2 years, the box stores have actually helped our industry and helped contract cleaners grow their business because homeowners are now understanding that those cheap power washers that they buy at the box store won't get the job done in a timely fashion.
I always like to ask whenever I seen somebody did the little red tip and they'd done about a section of about 10 feet. The first thing I'd always ask is, how long did that take you? Oh, that took me 4 hours and I couldn't walk for 2 days after that. I'd be like,
yeah,
that's good, because I'm going to rewash it. It's going to even look better, and it's going to take me about 30 minutes, you know.
Right.
But yeah, so that is definitely something that, you know, I like that what you're saying, because, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I just go buy one. Yeah. You know how many people's that bought a pressure washer then? And a lot of people, you know, it kind of goes back down to, you know, a lot of people don't even mow their grass anymore. You know, it's about time, and people understand about time, and time is the thing of, you know, is, you know, they want to be at their kid's soccer game. They want to be out on the lake. They don't want to be out there pressure washing. You know, that's what it's about at the end of the day, you know. And, you know, I know, you know, Kirk Kempton, he always said, we're just a customer service business, just happen to be doing pressure washing, or, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, these people want time to, you know, they got to go play, watch their kids soccer. They don't have time to do all this other stuff.
Yeah. I haven't mowed my grass in 20 years.
And why is that? Is it because you can't? Because you want to go out on the boat and you'd rather go play on the water than be mowing your grass.
Yeah. And you know what gets me is that I live in a decent neighborhood, and I see some of my neighbors that live here in the neighborhood that mow their grass. And I'm like, why would you mow your grass when your time is as valuable as it is? Why wouldn't you hire someone to mow your grass and go do something that's enjoyable with your family or your friends?
Yep.
That again, that's the priorities and understanding what is valuable in your life. And your time is so valuable. Why would you spend your time doing that? It's mind boggling to me when I see someone who's very successful mowing the grass. Okay. I take that back. Mowing the grass to them could be like being out on the boat. It is to me.
Right.
In that situation, I get it.
But then I think we're getting to a generation that a lot of people their kids don't even know how to mow grass. And at this point, it's one of those things that, you know, they never learned how to mow grass. I had two guys at the firehouse that had never started a lawnmower. And we're supposed to teach this kid how to run a chainsaw on a roof and not kill himself, you know?
Yeah. Well, not only not how to mow the grass, but they don't even know how to drive a car.
Right.
That's what freaks me out. It's how many people we hire or apply for a job and they cannot drive.
Really?
That's amazing. I won't hire anybody anymore if they don't have a driver's license, at least not to be one of our techs.
Right.
If they're coming to work and they're working in the building, that's different. They don't have to have a driver's license, but I just don't hire techs anymore. Because we got to the point to where we were hiring techs without driver's license, and you can never advance them to be a crew lead or to run a crew. I don't want to hire people that I can't promote.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about fleet washing, because I've never done fleet washing. I know that there's chemicals and that do all the work, and you all sell the chemicals and all that good stuff. But is fleet, as I've always seen, you know, I looked at, you know, house washing and I go, my minimum was $300. And when you're talking fleet washing, you're talking like $20 a vehicle a lot of times. And so how are you being able profitable being to be able to do that at that rate?
Well, I think it's the same thing as it is for house washing or anything else. It's the time it takes you to do the cleaning. You have to have your process down. You have to have good chemicals, and you got to be able to get in a timely fashion so you can get your dollar per hour that you're on the job site up to that number that it takes to be profitable. It's math. It's just being simple. And fortunately for me, when I first started, I had a watch on my arm the whole time that was telling, and I was constantly watching how long is it taking me to do something. And I would just start tweaking and doing things to adjust the job or keep an eye on my guys to make sure that everyone there was being productive. And that's just basically how I did it. You just got to have the process down to make that hourly rate that it takes to be profitable.
And I never knew, but can we talk a little bit, because I've never done it. And if you all want to learn about fleet washing, any of that kind of stuff, kitchen stuff, you see it on his go to Power Wash University. He has classes on it. But what is how does the chemical process work at Fleet Wash? And just kind of a 10-foot overview of it.
Okay. Well, when I teach Fleet Wash, and there's basically what I call three methods. You got a bucket and brush method, which is anybody can do the bucket and brush. Basically, you're wetting down the surface, or you're putting a soap on it, and then you rinse it off. You brush it off. You're using a mechanical means to remove the dirt and film. The second method is a single-step method, where you're using either, one, a strong soap that breaks off the film, or you're using high pressure with a mild soap. So it's a single step. So you hit it with one thing, and then you go back and you rinse it after that. It's one of those two steps, which is single, one of those two processes, which makes that a single step. Most guys in the industry now, when they're doing single step, is they're putting on very aggressive soaps, which are hot, which means they're a high alkaline or caustic, and they can be aggressive on the paints, but they rip off the film pretty good. And they're doing it with low pressure because not many guys are doing what I did back when I started in 85, and that's putting on a mild soap under high pressure. You have to plumb your equipment right and manage things correctly to do that. But we teach that as well. And it's one of our primary methods of cleaning with our fleet washing business. The other method, which really is the grandfather to soft washing, is a two-step process. Basically, soft washing is just putting on a strong detergent under low pressure.
So
two-stepping is, you're putting on an acid, okay, followed by a caustic. It creates a chemical reaction. It breaks the bond of the road film that's on the surface, and then you just rinse it off. And you're not using any pressure. You're using very mild pressure to do that.
So you're using a strong acid, and then you're using is that a base, or you're just using a caustic?
Yeah. So it's basically the same. Base and caustic, alkaline, all three of those can be terms used interchangeably for this. So you have a low pH followed by a high pH. Whatever terminology you want to put on that, acid, caustic, base, alkaline, right, whatever. And then that creates a micro...
I'm assuming that brings it back to zero, or brings it back to seven, correct?
Only if the blend of chemicals are matched up properly.
Right.
That's the ideal, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Now, do they have to reclaim all that stuff?
It depends. So wash water reclamation depends on the area. And so I would say that somewhere between 80 to 95% of the areas that you wash in, if it absorbs into the soil, you're okay. Now, there are areas of the country that's not going to work. You're going to have to put down, you're going to have to wash on an impermeable surface, such as a wash mat, concrete, or a blacktop. And then you're going to have to contain the water. You're going to have to suck it up and then dispose of it properly that way.
Uh-huh. And if you want to learn more about that, go to Power Wash University, because he's got a whole course on it. And I think you even do in-person training stuff on it too, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do.
So if you want to learn more about that, definitely go check it out, because I have zero clue and I don't want to have zero clue on it. So tell me one thing that you failed in your business and the three things that you learned from that failure.
Oh, man.
And okay. Here, why he's thinking of that, again, go check out his channel, because he does put a lot of deep thought videos out there that make you think, that's some good information right there.
Yeah, if you just search powerwash.com, the channel will pop up with a little circle and stuff. And we put it out there because we're always trying to help, definitely, just like you, Jason. You know what? I'm going to refer back, and hopefully I can think of three things. I think ego. It comes down to ego in running your business. I mean, when it comes to getting a little too cocky, thinking you know it all, that's when you fail. And the things that I learned when I humbled myself after that is that so one of the things that I usually look at when maybe I have a staff member, or I have a problem that seems to keep happening over and over and over. And so about 5-6 years ago, I had a very high turnover in my company. And my thought process was, if I hire this new person over here, that's going to fix the problem because they'll come in, they're causing me problems, and I won't have the turnover issues. This person is the bad apple and the cancer that's spreading throughout my company. If I replace them, that problem's going to be solved. But what happened was, is that this happened several times, but the cancer was still there, and I still had more cancer that came along. So I started thinking about this and started realizing that the turnover and the problems I was having weren't changing when I hired new people. So what was the core of the problem that always stayed the same? It was me. That was a hard pill to swallow, because usually when I saw those problems, I was able to identify something else and it left me out of it. Now I had to realize that if I wanted my company to become successful and to me to become a good leader, I had to change me first. And so what are the things that I saw that I fixed? Okay, so here's things that improved. First thing it was is I admitted to my team that I didn't have all the answers. That was hard for me to admit, because I always believed, which was a problem, that as a leader, I had to have all the answers. Not only did I have to have all the answers, I had to be able to answer those problems quickly, efficiently, and with good understanding of the problem, and to help them understand how my solution was the best solution. And when I finally realized that I didn't have all the answers and I admitted to my team, their trust in me probably jumped 5 to 10-fold. And I became a real person to them at that point. And they literally wanted to follow me more after that. I did not expect that. I actually thought I was going to lose people on my team when I had to admit that. So that was probably one of the first big benefit. The second thing I looked at is I started looking at why our field techs, our technicians were leaving us and not coming back. So I identified that I had supervisors that weren't, for lack of a better term, nurturing or supportive to people that we hired. And so they would bark an order. They wouldn't give reasons for why we did things a certain way. They wouldn't train people. They expected people to figure things out on their own. And so I started retraining my supervisors. And my supervisors that bought into the new training stayed with me. But I would say that probably out of 4 or 5 that I had, one made the change to the new system. And they flourished after that. Those are two. Let me see what the third one is. Trying to think of a third benefit there that I saw at that time, because that was probably one of the biggest. Oh, one is that whether people actually wanted to follow me now, they trusted me as a leader. I kind of said that earlier, but
no, but that makes sense, because when you showed that showed your weakness of, and that's where if you find the people that where you're weak and they're strong. And you allow that you show that, that's not always a bad thing. And that's a hard thing to deal with a lot of times.
So being a good leader is part of being a humble person and being able to admit your faults and not trying to hide them. So that in itself, I think, was probably one of the biggest growth experiences for me. And one of the most challenging at that time to learn and understand, having to go through the process, made me a better leader afterwards. And it sounds like I'm saying the same thing over and over, but I just don't know how to say it better. But it also helped me understand mentally the things that I had and the roadblocks I had in my own mental process that kept me from being the head of the company that I needed to be, and or or to be that person that led others and led the company. Now it's so rewarding because I'm able to coach people, and sometimes in my coaching, I don't have the answers. They're like helping me find the answers, and they're learning them at the same time too. So being able to be a good leader that's coaching, that process helped me develop good coaching skills too. So that's probably the third thing that I could add to that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That was good.
So the point I want to make is that I didn't say anything here that had to do with power washing.
No.
It had nothing to do with power washing. It was just about growing as a person and an individual and being in a position to take advantage of that. The benefit is that my power washing entities will grow and flourish because of me developing my mind and becoming better sharpening the tool that guides my life.
Right. Now that was deep right there, Michael. And that's why I always ask that question. Cause that, you never know where that question is going to come out of. So if you was a new guy and you were starting out, what are some things, a couple things that would make a new guy successful? I know we got a lot of guys on here that, I got, several guys that have been very successful, been very, very blessed this year. I was talking to one earlier today. He's like, 6 months ago, you said I would have made 10 grand a month. I'd have said you were crazy. And he hit it. He's going to hit 15,000 in November. Sweet. And, it's been mindset blocks. But what are some things that you would tell new guys or like that type of person to be able to keep being successful and getting to that next level?
I would say the number one thing you want to focus on are sales and marketing.
What? You mean you got to do marketing?
Sales and marketing. Without business, without the customers to service, you can't grow your business.
Now, do you have any, I know you probably teach it in your thing, but is there any books or anything like that that you would recommend on either one of those?
Oh, man.
I mean, I always talk about the pumpkin plan is a good one to kind of talk about a little bit of that and stuff like that.
You know what? That's probably my biggest weaknesses, sales and marketing. And I've been focusing a lot on it this year. And so if you kind of read into my story a little bit, I was the technician. I always believed that I had to have a good process, get the word of mouth, and that would grow my business. And I actually grew slow. I should be a lot bigger than I am, probably 5 to 10 or maybe even 15 times bigger than I am right now. And because of the changes that I've made over the last year and a half, I've really started to focus more on the sales and marketing side of things because Brandon Vaughn with the Conquer Group did an interview with Mike Michalowicz. And he does the Profit First book, and he did another book, and I wish I could remember the name of it.
The Pumpkin Plan. He does the Time Clock.
Oh, did he do the Pumpkin Plan like you just said?
Yeah, he does the Pumpkin Plan.
His interview was just like his interview with some things that Brandon, Josh Latimer, and Jason Evers, I've been talking to these guys over the past year that they all three of them had something that helped me over this last year. And thank goodness, through COVID, I've been applying those things. But the number one thing that stood out to me was that I've never been good at marketing and I've never been good at sales. And Mike Michalowicz in his interview with Brandon Vaughn talked about how if you look at, and I may say this wrong, Maslow's hierarchy of life, you need to have food and shelter. You need to have food. Then you have shelter. Then, a companion or however it works like that. But the very base of that is food and then shelter, right? Well, that's the same thing for your business. The very base of that is sales and you got to have customers. And without that, all the stuff up above doesn't happen. You're not able to pay for equipment. You're not able to buy a building. You're not able to create a structure for your employees to survive in. You can't pay your employees if you don't have good paying jobs. So you got to start with sales first. So focus on sales, getting those sales, and hone your skills as a good salesman. I hated selling. I can do it. I can still go out and sell. I can still go meet with customers. And I got enough. Let me put it this way. I've got enough experience to sell to know when it's time to shut up and let the sale complete the process. And I've worked with guys that sit there and they don't know when to be quiet because they don't have experience or the interpersonal skill sets to be able to talk to somebody and recognize what their needs are so that you can complete a sale. I'll tell you what, here's a book that you should read. Now, it's going to have some old references because it was written, I think, in 1930s or the 1950s. The book is by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think that will help you on the sales side, the personal side. It can help you in all aspects of your life. Now, the only downside to that is that when Dale wrote that book, you got the mindset of the country was very different. And fortunately, I have some grandparents that I can relate to when he writes it. Now, we do this we do book reviews in our leadership, in our management team. And this is a book we just finished. And so I see some of our young staff members like talking about this book and how they don't like it. So we have to explain things about that book that made sense back then, what the interpretations are. But the point is learning to talk to people, learning how to keep your mouth shut, learning how to swallow your ego and make things happen because there's a greater good at the end of it. There's a lot of great references, a lot of great stories that are in that book. And honestly, I wish I'd have read that book in my 20s. I wish I'd have read that book when I started my business because it would have helped me in so many different aspects and different levels and of life and business. And based on the conversation you and I are having, that would probably be the number one book that I would recommend you get in to read.
I agree. It's a good book.
Yeah.
So awesome. Awesome. Well, I don't want to keep you too long. I know you got the old COVID and,
I'll make it. I'm doing good. I got to stay in quarantine. My HR lady isn't going to let me back in the building till I've been out of there for at least 10 days and I can test negative. So,
so we did get up to 99 just a recent ago. So again, if you go check out, I will put the different link on there. You can check out powerwash.com. I'll put it on there too. Powerwash.com. If you need any equipment, if you need any of that kind of stuff, they got chemicals, they got all kinds of stuff. You're probably one of the top three or four biggest stores in the country. So
thank you. Jason, I'll share this out in our newsletter and stuff. So, people can see your channel and stuff so we can, you know, basically help each other. That's what it's about. You know, not to digress down a negative path, but there are just people out there in the industry that are always throwing rocks and trying to insinuate, you know, that others aren't trying to help and things like that. And if anybody is aware, just try to steer clear of people like that because they're only going to bring you down and they're going to try to create rifts and divisions that aren't necessary in the industry. And I'm always here to help. I know you're always here to help. And I just want to say that and put that out there that's what it's about.
I agree 100%. You know, I'd rather collaborate, you know, and that's what I was telling people. You know, if you got competition, you're better off going talking to these people instead of being, rah, rah, rah,
yeah,
you know, because exactly. You never know. You might need, you know, even if it's the big dog, you might, hey, here's this job to you, you know, or, you know, I need help, then they can help you. And that's the thing. You're better off to work together than working against each other. So yeah. I agree. And I'd much rather collab with you than have to fight against you because he's pretty built and ripped, so no. I'm just big and fat, and he's as tall as I am. You're pretty close to tall as I am, I think. So
yeah, I think we are pretty close to the same height.
I'm 6'6", so
yeah. No, you got me beat. You got about 4 inches on me then.
Are you? Oh, I thought you looked. Maybe it was just that big life size thing they had at the huge that day made you look like.
Well, I used to be 6'3", but age has caught up to me. I'm 6'2" now, so I'm starting to shrink. So I don't want to shrink anymore, but it's going to happen. Mm. It's part of life.
All right, guys. That is all the time we have for today's show on today's King of Pressure Wash podcast. I know you find it as exciting as I did. If you appreciate the work we do here at King of Pressure Wash, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode and give this episode a share on your favorite social media network. And if you're looking to start and grow your own pressure washing business, help support your family and give you financial freedom and time freedom, be sure to sign up at Pressure Wash Help Community so you can become the king of pressure washing in your area.